Hey, let's talk about the simple life when we come back. Gary Collins back with us, and this is going to be an interesting and fun couple hours. So get ready on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Let me tell you about Gary Collins. Was raised in the high desert at the basin of the Sierra Nevada mountain range in a very rural part of California. Now lives in a remote area off the grid in northeast Washington state. Gary has a diverse background that includes military intelligence, being a federal government special agent, entrepreneur, author, college professor. He has been involved in organized sports, nutrition, fitness for almost four decades. He's an active follower and teacher of life simplicity to include self-reliant, survivalist, off-the-grid lifestyle. He's got a number of books from Going Off the Grid to the Simple Life series, which we'll tell you about as we move along here. Gary, welcome back, my friend. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me on again, George. I really appreciate it.
Have you escaped the coronavirus mess wherever you may be?
Oh, my.
I know
where
it.
To start on that, huh?
That's another show all by itself, Gear.
Oh, yeah. I actually did an interview right as it hit, and the guy asked me with my background. He goes, what do you think? I go, I feel a disaster coming. I can smell money being spread around like water. I just kind of predicted everything, and it was pretty interesting. I told him, yeah, I the data does not support what they're saying. And, you know, yeah, I got away. I was in California living in my RV by where I grew up, and as soon as it got crazy, I took off in late March and headed up to the house, even though there was still snow on the ground and all that good stuff, but it was fine.
Well, they shut down California, so I escaped there, came to St. Louis, my other location, and then they immediately went into a lockdown quarantine here. They have relaxed it somewhat. I'm supposed to go back to California in a couple weeks, and they really haven't relaxed it too much that yet. So
no,
I don't know what I'm going to do.
Family, yeah, I have friends who are done. They're moving. They said they've had enough. And it's a crazy time. It really is, and the perfect storm. But I tell people with my lifestyle, because I get asked all the time, they go, how has it affected you? I go, very little. Now, I didn't change my life a whole lot, but I kind of prepared my life for things like this, is the best way to put it. So,
what was it that got you interested in living away, living off the grid?
Well, you know, growing up rural in a very small town, my town in California, people find this hard to believe, there's remote parts of California, but it was 1,800 people. And the town I lived in was attached, was 25 miles away, two different towns with 50 and 100 people. So I grew up that way. And once I left, I went to San Diego State, you know, 38,000 people in the university, and was overwhelmed and spent the next 20 plus years of my life living all over the country in cities and traveling all over to cities. And I just had kind of had enough. I wanted to get back to a simpler, easier life and just live, you know, not live like, you know, Ted Kaczynski or anything, but I just wanted to live in the woods again and live a quiet, have a life, have a place to get away from everything. And that's basically where it started. And it started, gosh, well over a decade ago when I first started planning it.
Well, what I found, Gary, for the shutdown is I miss being around people. And that's kind of intriguing because I do think people need people. Does that get to you ever?
I agree with that. And that's, I mean, people, they watch the TV shows. And we have the most information we've ever had access to in our lives, but we're also the most misinformed and uninformed we've ever been in our lives, it seems like, as humans. I have contact. I go into town once, twice a week, my little town here, and then I go into Spokane, the bigger city, at least once a week. You know, I go get supplies to, you know, for my projects and building. And I have friends around here. You know, my buddy lives down the road from me a couple miles, my neighbors. You know, I'm not out in the middle. You know, it's not like I'm living in the middle of Alaska and no one's around me. I have people around me, and I agree. But some people who go off the grid, they want to be completely and utterly left alone.
Yeah,
I'm not that. I'm one of those guys that say, when I want to be around people, I'm around people. When I don't want to be around people, I'm not around people. It's that easy.
Well, I never knew how much fun it would be during this lockdown to go to the supermarket. I mean, you're around there and there's people there and there are things there and you sit, you're in there for an hour. Normally I'm there for 15 minutes, but it gives you something to do.
Yeah. And well, when I drove up here, I went a different route. I took a route around in the back way. So it was more remote. It was weird. I mean, there nothing was open. It was.
Oh, it's just like a ghost town everywhere.
Yeah. And I was in more remote area where I drove. And it was bizarre. And I had a hard time finding a hotel open. I drove extra hours into like 1 a.m. because I couldn't find a hotel that was open.
Everything booked or just closed?
No, closed.
Wow.
This was the end of March. And when everything had hit.
Right in the middle of it. Yeah, right.
Yeah, everyone just shut everything down. So there's no places to eat, no places to stay. The only things open were gas stations. That was about it.
Was there an event? Was there something in your life that got you interested in basically having this simplification of living?
You know, it was spending half my life in the government. I think that's what did it to me.
That'll do it.
I did many different things in the government. It gave me a wide swatch of how our government works. I tell people, I don't know just how the sausage is made. I was the sausage. Is what I was saying.
Right.
I go, for me, I could kind of see things coming and doing protection. And I was around some of the most powerful people in the world and hearing private conversations and seeing how senators and congresspeople talked to each other and acted behind the scenes. It was frightening. And I went, oh my God, if people knew what was really going on, they might burn this place down. And so I just realized that for me, I better be prepared. I better get my, debt-free, live the life I want, run a remote business, find my life purpose. And I just kind of planned that. I wasn't around people doing it. I just kind of came up with my own plan.
Well, not everybody can live that way totally, but they can make their life a little simpler, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. And that's why the books, how I do my books, they're, I have the off-the-grid books. And then the simple life is more general mainstream is the way I put it. I go, you can live a simple life in the city. I mean, it's not hard to do. But if you want to take the next step and live off the grid or you're interested in it, I just bought another property in another state that will go undisclosed this time because I have a lot of people around me who have read this book.
I bet.
Honest with you. Yeah, I have neighbors everywhere now and people email me, hey, I live in the town over next from you. Read your book. So I realized, oh, be quiet on the next one. And so I bought 20 acres in another place, but that's going to be grid tied. So that house will be tied to the grid, but it will be hooked up off grid, on grid, basically. I'll have all the same off grid technology, but I'll be tied in just in case.
Yeah, well, that's true. And it's a shame. I have been a proponent of insulating our grid from an EMP attack or a solar flare from the sun. And we still haven't gotten it accomplished yet. We're getting closer. Legislation's kicked around, passing around. But that would be so important, Gary, to get our power grid protected, because if that goes down, society crumbles.
Oh, absolutely. We saw it when I was living in San Diego before I moved up here. Oh, this got to be eight, 9 years ago when the guy in Arizona, the power line employee, clipped the line. Or did something to a transformer and he knocked out power in like 4 states.
Yeah.
Or something ridiculous. And I remember when that happened, and luckily I had a backup generator and I just bought it not too long ago. People were losing their mind because they said, oh, we could go 2-3 days without power. And people were shooting guns in the air, parties, fireworks, and they got the power on early in the morning that next day. And everyone had to go back to work. And it kind of taught me a lesson of, people kind of lose their minds if they think there's no power. And for me up here, literally the power will go out because we'll get windstorms and rain and snow and stuff, and it will knock power. I don't know. I have no idea when the power's out. I'm not on the grid.
Yeah.
My power works just fine.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Now, you've got a project called the Grid Project. What is that?
Oh, my off-grid project. I just documented everything I've done, and it's an ongoing project. I just added two solar panels yesterday. I built a rack for them out of 2x4x8 pressure treated. Built it, put wheels on it. It's mobile. I can move it. And, you know, just stuff like that. I just share the adventure as I keep going. So it's, I just call it my off-the-grid project.
What exactly is living off the grid?
Well, it depends. There's a couple different definitions. I define it as simply not being connected to public utilities. Some of the diehards and hardcore people say it means you're not attached to technology. You know, you have an outhouse, you don't have any, no running water. There's all kinds, but technically it's just not being tied to public utilities is the easiest way to define it.
And by living off the grid, do you feel secure? Do you feel like you're doing your own thing? What's that feeling like?
Yeah, it's hard to explain, but it is complete freedom. I've walked my dogs for, you know, 7 years now at this property. I've never run into another human being. I have neighbors.
Really?
Yeah. I've run into them hunting a couple times, ran into neighbors driving their ATVs or driving around, but I'm on the, and I bought 30 more acres on another part of my property down, way down. And yeah, I mean, people ride around their ATVs and motorcycles. I don't even hear them. I can't hear them.
Crazy.
So it's really being free, but also, what I tell people is all the noise goes away. I mean, not only environmentally, but mentally as well.
And you could see the stars.
You can see the stars. You know, you don't, at night, you don't have honking sirens, you know, people slamming their car doors, loud motorcycles. There's none of that. It's pure quiet. So when I go back to a city, the first thing I notice is the noise. That's the first thing I notice. Just like everything.
Oh, I mean, it's like when insects stop in the woods, you hear this silence. You know something's going on here. Insects have stopped. You can hear the deafness. You can hear the deafness. That's how quiet it is. And I guess that would be the same when you go into the city, when you're so used to being quiet. I mean, you could hear everything. Traffic, horns, everything, right?
Yeah, even when I travel and do I do public speaking and all that, and when I go to a hotel, I struggle the first night sleeping because it's just so loud. I hear everything, and I think what I noticed too is your hearing gets better. For some reason, I hear a lot better now when I go someplace. I can hear things I couldn't hear before. And I think it's because you're just not exposed to all that environmental noise all the time.
You hear people whispering a block away now, where you couldn't hear them at all, probably.
Well, those are the microphones. No, and it is. It's an interesting life, and it's very hard to explain to people. I struggle with it at times. I go, unless you do it, it's really hard to explain because I just don't have the stresses of what other people have. I'm very mellow and calm on my property. It's just, it's weird. It's hard to explain. It really is.
Tell us about the Simple Life series.
Yeah, when the first time I came on, I think I was working on the very first book of that series. Now I just released
book. That was about a year ago you were with me.
No, 3 years ago now.
Was it? I thought it was. I thought the last. Oh, the first time. But the last time was in May of last year.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Simple Life came about. Everything I've done came about organically. None of this was planned. Matter of fact, Going Off the Grid, my best-selling book, I never intended to write that book. That book was, it came about by accident. And so the Simple Life was more of people who were interested in the lifestyle, but not necessarily living off the grid. And so I went, well, all I have to do is basically share my lifestyle. That's the Simple Life. And I realized I was just teaching life simplification. So it's six books now. I just put out the latest one digitally, which is Small Habits for Big Change. They're all called The Simple Life. They all cover different topics, like decluttering your life. Last time we spoke, I was getting ready to release Financial Freedom.
That's right.
And caused a whole storm when I said, I've proven in the book that almost every American loses money on their house, even though they think they made money. People lost their minds. And I go, hey, I had a real estate license for 8 years. That was my side hustle. I still do property. I know how this works. I know how the numbers work. And so I proved it. I proved it in the book. I proved, matter of fact, that every American has the potential to be a millionaire if they actually manage their money correctly. and paid attention.
And saved.
That's what it's about. It's not an investing book. I tell people that. It's all done with math, basic math, you know, addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. That's the only math in it. And I go through step by step as from a young child all the way into retirement, how we just waste over $1 million. I prove, and loosely, I didn't even go into everything because it would have been overwhelming. But yeah, I just go through and show people this is where you're spending your money. This is where you're wasting your money, and you get nothing out of it. It's just pure waste. So it has nothing to do with even saving for retirement or as investing. It's about how managing the money you have.
I've got a friend who's so frugal. He's got like $500,000 in the bank, but he doesn't spend it on anything. He just keeps saving and saving. Shouldn't you at least have some fun with it too?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the thing. I go, there's a difference between being frugal and cheap. When you're being cheap, you cut pennies on everything, even though it could cost you time. I'm a firm believer in buying something right once. You know, when I buy my tools, when I buy hunting gear, when I buy things like that, you know, my laptop for my business, I buy good quality items. I don't want to have to rebuy them. And what people do when they're cheap is they just go buy the cheapest, you know, hammer, drill, or axe they can find, and the thing breaks on them. Then they got to go buy another one. Then they buy another one. And I still have mine. And by the end, they've spent more money on junk than I have just buying it once. So there is a difference. And I do tell people, I live a good lifestyle. I mean, I have a good time. You know, I travel. I do what I want. But I pay attention to what I spend my money on.
What has surprised you about this kind of lifestyle? Anything?
Yeah, you know, probably the biggest thing for me is how different it is from normal, everyday American life. You know, I knew it would be different. I grew up in the middle of nowhere. I grew pretty close to living off the grid as a kid. You know, when you're poor and you don't have a lot, you're pretty much off the grid. You know, we didn't have cable TV. Well, it didn't really exist. It kind of did. You know, there was no internet. We used a party line, you know, for our
right.
phone.
I remember you had to wait for somebody to get off.
Yeah, I had to wait for Gertrude to get off every night.
You could literally listen to Gertrude's phone call when you pick up the phone.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and she could listen to mine. And, you know, and for me, it was the biggest surprise is living a simple life is hard, the process. But once you get there, everything becomes much easier.
Yeah.
And that addition by subtraction, it's difficult. It's harder than you think. And I always tell people, simple doesn't mean easy.
Well, when you were talking about the Simple Life Guide to Financial Freedom, talking about how we lose money in our houses, how do we lose money that way?
Well, and I go into compound and simple interest. I noticed there was kind of a lacking in most personal finance books. And they never described how compounding works, simple interest, amortization, and how your loans are front-loaded. So your house, your biggest loan you're going to have, for the most part, it's front-loaded. And the average American spends 6 to 7 years in their house, and then they either upsize, move, change locations. So by taking out a 30-year loan, even with good interest rates, if you've actually paid the majority of your interest, a big portion of it within those first 6 or 7 years.
We'll come back and talk more, Gary, in a moment. Calls with you next hour. Gary Collins with us, The Simple Life on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you along with Gary Collins. We'll take calls with Gary next hour. If you're living off the grid, some of you are, check in with us. Like to know what life is like for you. Gary, I've noticed a trend that some homes are being built, but they're really, really tiny homes. They're little framed homes. They've got like a kitchen, a bedroom, which is maybe your living room, really small, and a bathroom. What's going on with that?
Yeah, the teeny home movement's been around a while. I actually dedicated a chapter to it in my Going Off the Grid book back in the day. And I always tell people, be careful with things like that become trendy. Basically, they're on a rolling chassis. It's a small house, but that can be towed around. Like, that's the thing, right? You you buy a smaller house, try to get debt free, but they're actually, if you buy them pre-built, they're very expensive. They end up being like $500 plus a square foot. Basically become mansion cost per square foot.
Jeez, that's good. Yeah, exactly. But they're what, 500 square feet or something like that?
Oh, God, no. They're like 100, 110, maybe 200 at the very, very most.
Really? That's it?
Yeah, there's two types of teeny homes. So you have the ones that you can move place to place, and then a teeny home permanent structure is considered 500 square foot or less. So there's kind of two types of teeny homes.
Are there any teeny home subdivisions?
There are. There are some around the country. They're very few. They're hard to get approved. Most places do not want them because obviously it's a lower tax base because the property's, the house, not as worth as much.
Exactly.
And they just, I don't know, they just don't like it. It's like the rolling chassis teeny home, which are the most popular. You still have to get them registered through the motor vehicles department and have them inspected. You just can't put them on the back of your Subaru and drag them around the country. And they're really heavy and top heavy. So, yeah, I tell people, if you want to build it yourself, I'm all for it. Don't buy one pre-built. They're super expensive for what they are. You're better off just buying an RV, to be honest with you.
Gary, let me ask you about this, too. This is okay. A tragedy in our country, but people who are homeless, and I see a lot of them in Los Angeles, living in cardboard boxes underneath bridges, or they've got shopping carts from grocery stores that they have their life belongings in that shopping cart, which consists of blankets and things like that. And they're sleeping on the sidewalk. And, you know, they got a blanket over their head or something like that. This is a huge situation, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's a difficult situation, right? Because you want to be compassionate and you want to make sure that these people have an opportunity to have, you know, a shelter, be able to get out of the weather and the elements and obviously be safe. And I know there was that guy in LA who was building them little kind of like shed houses,
little huts. Yeah.
Yeah. And oh boy, the city came down on him like no other. I heard a recent interview. I think he was still battling, but I'm pretty sure they made him stop. I don't know if he started back up, but that's a great solution, I thought. Man, that guy was doing a great service. It is a big problem, but then you get into, you know, the socioeconomic of and the psychological aspect. Do they want to be homeless? Do they want to live that lifestyle? You know, or are they forced to, you know, it's a tough one.
Well, what do you do when you're out of a job or you're older and you're sick and you have no family? I mean, this is a real, real problem. I've always thought that cities should build what I would call homeless cities, where they build literally shelters, huge apartment complexes, and make a city for the homeless. It's free for the homeless. And, you know, you would say that some people who don't want to pay rent might move in. Well, you might get a few of those. But generally, you make it available to homeless people, and you build literally somewhere a city within a city for those people.
Yeah, I know that's been tried, and I think there are a few of them. The problem is once you involve a city and a bureaucracy, all of a sudden a real estate and, you know, developer's involved who's a buddy of the mayor, you know, a cousin, uncle. Next thing you know, the subcontractor's related, and it turns into a mess, and a affordable house or apartment for them to live in, which should cost $20,000, now costs $500,000 each. That's the problem, is the corruption gets involved. And they've tried it, and they've done it, as far as the corruption just goes out of control. Remember, you know, Section 8 housing. I owned apartments. I dealt with Section 8. And
that is, the check comes from government, right?
Yeah, their rent is paid. Yeah, is paid. And with the homeless, I agree, but I think it would have to be done privately to make it work correctly. And, you know, maybe these guys, these, you know, such do-gooders, maybe Bill Gates and Zuckerberg and Bezos could actually spend some of their money on something good besides mining my data. and, you know, build something. I have a lot of heartburn, and people know, with the richest people in this country, because I think they're absolutely terrible people, most of them. Because they could fix a lot of these problems with their wealth, and they just don't do it.
No, they.
I mean,
some of them.
You know, why are they not doing it? They could do it completely privately, no government interference. They have the connections to get it done quicker. They have the money. They do nothing. They do absolutely.
Well, it's not that they do nothing. They give their money to different causes that may not be worthwhile. You know, they may give $2 million to some university or something, where that $2 million could have been better spent helping a group of homeless people in their town or something.
Yeah, I agree. Well, and it's all write-offs. I mean, they all have foundations, and anyone who knows anything about a foundation like that, it's just a place for them to launder money for the most part and fly around and go around the world and write it off through their foundation. Unfortunately.
I mean, I don't fault them for making the money. They're geniuses at what they did. You know, good for them. I mean, I wish we could all do that. But, you know, once you make so much, help people.
You got to give back. It's, you know, pay it forward. You know, you got there because of us. We're the consumer. We're the one who made you rich. I mean, don't get me wrong. You created great products, great services. But at a certain point, how much is, I mean, do you need a couple $100 billion? I mean, to me, that's so beyond comprehension of what you need in life that it's like, and people will go, well, it's all locked up in stocks. And I go, well, sell them, liquidate them. I'm confused. Just because it's in stocks that you can't use it? I have a lot of heartburn. Like, and with the coronavirus and them saying overrunning hospitals and, you know, not having enough respirators, which that's a whole nother issue.
Right.
Respirators.
And they may not work anyway in some cases.
They don't work. It's dangerous to use them. You only use those as a last-ditch effort. And it appears that they were primarily used to bill an extra $30,000 and killed people. I'd like to see the stats on how many people they killed with respirators. But I said, well, why didn't the five richest people, they could put together and build 6-10,000-bed emergency facilities for something like this in the blink of an eye? They could do it in 6 months.
Well, I've always thought someone like Jeff Bezos, who makes his money on Amazon, which makes its money on being on the Internet, which makes its money from being on a power source, he alone could insulate the power grid to protect it from these two things I mentioned earlier. He all by himself could say, if the power goes down, Amazon shut down, I will lose billions. I'm going to spend $2 billion, which is the projected cost, and fix the power grid. He could do that overnight. What a great investment that would be.
I don't know what it is about these guys. They're just wired wrong. If it was me, I always tell people, if I'd be one of the worst, richest people in the world, because I'd give most of it away because I don't need that much. You know, I don't need that much to live. I don't need a private jet. It would be nice if I was traveling all the time, but I don't need one.
You know, I fly Southwest and American Airlines, Frontier, once in a while. And you know what? I get in line, and it's fun. You see people. I don't have a problem with that.
I don't know. A lot of the problems in this country could be solved by these people doing the right thing. And I'm not saying, you know, they have to. I never say charity should be forced. But it just, to me, I don't understand what they're doing. I just don't understand it. And I hope they have a change of heart, but I don't think so.
Well, and spending your money on a vaccine may not be the best investment either.
Well, yeah, Bill Gates has a terrible track record of some of his little adventures like that of supposedly inoculating people and killing them and giving them untested. Oh boy, yeah. And he just so happens to be heavily invested in the company that's giving them
the
yikes. Yep. Yikes, George. It makes me cringe.
And you've turned into kind of a health nut yourself, haven't you?
I've always been a health nut.
Good for you.
I've played sports since I was 7. And for me, though, I was doing it all wrong, like most Americans, right?
I was too.
What I was told.
I thought I was doing it right, And I was do for years, I was doing it wrong. I woke it up. I woke up in the year 2000 and said, I want to change my lifestyle. And I did.
Yeah, when I worked for the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the FDA, that's where I changed. I realized, oh, I'm going about this all wrong. If we're relying on these people for our health, we're in trouble. I realized it real quickly that these agencies don't have our best interest at heart, and the drug companies and big medical. I was like, whoa, these are not the most ethical businesses. I need to take care of myself, and it should be that way anyway, right? It's your responsibility.
Yeah, you've got to be proactive yourself.
Have to, and it's a lifelong ordeal. You know, people want to take the easy pill and be healthy tomorrow and then not do anything. Health is till you take that last breath. I mean, you got to be working on it every single day. It doesn't go away.
I do a workout 4 days a week. 4 days a week, religiously, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I take Friday and Saturday and Sunday off.
Well,
I got to tell you,
part about them in the woods.
I mean, I will wake up tomorrow morning, Monday, and go, oh, do I really got to? But I do. I do religiously, because then you start feeling guilty if you miss it. And I got to tell you, Gary, there are some days I got appointments or business meetings or whatever, and I got to wake up a little earlier to get my little workout out. So I don't miss it. I mean, it's really weird how you become so used to it that you have to do it.
Well, and that's the best advice I give people who always use the excuse, I don't have time, which we have plenty of time. We just waste it. I just did a podcast episode on that. That I tell people the best way to make sure you get your workout in is you schedule it. It's got to be scheduled, and the best way to do it is before you go anywhere, you wake up and you work out first thing in the morning. That's the easiest way to keep it on schedule.
And get it out of the way.
Get it out of the way. There's no excuses after that. Not only that, it speeds up your metabolism more to do it in the morning. And, you know, if you don't schedule it and you always do the, well, I'll do it later. And me up here, you know, I have a little home gym, you know, so all the gyms were closed.
Yep.
I didn't care, and I live on 58.
You did your thing. That's right. Do you supplement a lot, too? I do.
I don't supplement a lot. People who don't know, I started a health company after I got out of FDA, and I was training athletes. So I've had a supplement line, and I've taken supplements since my teenage years. So I take, there's a certain grouping of supplements that I sell that I've taken, you know, the basics is what I tell people.
Yep.
And yeah, no, supplementation is huge today because we're very nutrient deficient. Even healthy people are.
I'm convinced that vitamin C, D3, and zinc with some quinine water, which you get in tonic water, helps fight this COVID situation.
Well, absolutely. And they said that one of the big stats was a vitamin D3 deficiency in most people who were killed by
virus. No, you're absolutely right.
The problem with that stat is 70% of Americans are deficient
in
vitamin D. And the number kind of mirrored the number. So I was like, well, it's significant, but not, because everyone is deficient. You know, almost everyone in the country is deficient on vitamin D3. But another problem was this bad data, because now we know it was mainly obese elderly people with underlying health conditions, and the average age of death was older than the average lifespan of the average American.
Yes. And they still really don't point that out. They don't point that out. I mean, my friends in the media don't point that out. They just merely give numbers, and they don't give specific demographics of those numbers. Or, as you said, the obesity, prior health issues, that is critical in all of these numbers.
Well, and the fact that, you know, heart disease, obesity, you know, cancer, you know, accidents, surgical accidents, those far outnumber the deaths each year.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, it's not even close. But no one's talking about obesity. No one's out in the streets protesting or doing anything about that. And it's like, that's killing us. We're the most obese nation in the world by far. The closest is China, and they're pretty far behind us. I mean, we lead by a big belt size, and I just tell people, I teach the three-legged stool in the simple life: optimal health, financial freedom by being debt-free, and your life purpose.
All right, Gary, take a quick break at the top of the hour here. We're going to come back, sir, and take phone calls with you. We'll talk a little bit more about your Simple Life series, but we'll take some calls next hour on Coast to Coast AM with Gary Collins. Don't go away.